What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. Hi, Shereen.
Hello. Today, we have a long one for you today, but it's really important and filled with good information. We talk about what's going on in our country and abroad with the killing of Black people and Latino Americans. And then we get into the history of white terrorism within our law enforcement.
Yes, we do. It's a wild ride. So stick with us. We talk about a lot of very important things. And, you know, remember, Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, Anna.
Hi, Shereen.
Today, we're recording another solo episode. By solo, I mean the two of us. I feel like I know what that means and you know what that means, but for our listeners, I just mean it's just the two of us again.
And by that you mean Han Solo is joining us.
Yes, exactly. Harrison Ford, thank you so much for being here. But in all seriousness,
input is greatly needed.
We have so
right
many
now.
Things we want to talk about today. There are so many things in the news that deserve addressing, and I really hope that we can at least mention some of them, so if we don't cover them completely, you guys can make your own research on your own, because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world and it needs talking about.
I agree. Sorry, I saw Sean King was trending and I was like, great.
Oh god, there are so many funny tweets about him that I really enjoy, but I don't want to give him the time of day right now.
He's such a fool. Guys, stop retweeting Sean King. Yeah. He's not here for anyone but Sean King.
To really, like, I think the biggest thing is that he's gotten in trouble in the past for raising donations that have no receipts. Like, we don't know where those donations went other than just, like, funding his own self. And he's honestly just, like, a recycling machine of other viral things. Like, I don't think that's journalism.
Yeah, anyway, he doxes Black women.
Mm-hmm.
Puts them in danger and, like, threatens to sue them if they, like, casually tweet something about him. Because he doesn't care about
there
Black
are
women.
Other creators you can follow that are doing good work. And if Black Lives Matter and if Black activists say that he's, like, not with them, then you should trust that. But do your own research, whatever.
But in this case, you don't have to do your own research. Sean King is trash.
Right.
We've told you.
I just mean, like, because the things that I've learned about him are from, like, articles I've read. So, and that, like, kind of, like, solidified my opinion of him. But should we just get into this one? Because there's so much to talk about. Are you good if I just, like, start off? Actually, we still have our T Public fundraiser going on.
Right. So To start, we are doing a fundraiser. I mean, we've been tweeting about this, and I mean, I think our promotion of it slowed down because, you know, it always feels weird trying to like insist people buy something when there's clearly like a world.
More pressing issues.
Yeah, like a revolution going on, if you will. But yeah, we have a shirt that we designed, or that Chris Downs of Tee Public designed with our ideas, notes, whatever. And the sales for this show, this limited edition shirt, goes towards Relief International. And they basically, what Relief International does is they work with Middle Eastern countries to provide PPE, any sort of support they can, to countries like Iran, Afghanistan, basically anywhere that's like aggressively suffering from coronavirus or COVID-19, and that their country them just doesn't have the resources to help. Like they can't help their own doctors because they don't even themselves, the government, have the resources to give them PPE. And especially Iran, which suffers from horrible, horrible sanctions that the U.S. has put on them. So a lot of these doctors will be on their deathbeds with COVID-19 and at the same time still trying to treat patients. Like literally, you'll see a doctor. I've seen photos of a doctor who's sitting at her desk doing the last of her paperwork with like an IV attached to her that she's walking around with because she herself is dying of COVID-19 and still doing her best to do her job for the other patients. Yeah. Like just even if she can't work directly with them, she's sitting at her desk working like with a whatever mask they could find on her and just surviving. That's like all they can do. And doctors are dying in troves. Like we're losing all our like great minds in Iran because there's not enough PPE to help anyone. And so Relief International sends shipments. If you go to their Instagram, they have their receipts. If you just go look, you see where everything is going. They help Jordan. They help, I mean, any Middle Eastern country that, you know, they do their research, they're listening, they see who is struggling. And I mean, like their motto is we work in fragile settings, which the most of the Middle East is very fragile due to how the rest of the world treats them.
Yeah. So you can get the design on a shirt, you can get on anything, but the proceeds go to Relief International and the promotion's still going. So if you guys want a new shirt for your quarantine, and I do want to bring up, no matter where you are, COVID is a very real pandemic still going on. And I know that some cities are opening back up. We live in LA and things are like opening back up again. I have family in medicine. My roommate is a doctor. And I think we should all keep on going as if we were still in quarantine. I think it's way too early to open things back up. Ask any medical professional, they would agree. And we're not being prepared for a second wave. We are still very much in the first wave of this. And I just think we should all still practice social distancing, wear your mask when you're outside. It's really easy to like pretend that we're just bored of this if it's not directly affecting you. But I really encourage you to read stories of people that have been affected by this or their family members that have been affected by this. Those are the stories that really impact me to like try to protect myself. And then by doing that, protecting others, if that makes sense. But just that off the bat, please keep wearing your masks and please just keep social distancing. It's not a fucking ticket to just start going out to bars again. It's not over. Literally nothing has changed. There's no vaccine. There's no cure. And the government officials care more about the economy than they do the people, essentially. And it's really disheartening to see that they're willing to put lives at risk just to make money. But that's America.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot to talk about. I'll start this by saying we're recording this on June 22nd. So I'm not sure in the next week what kind of news will be coming out. But as of now, there have been 6 lynching victims in the past few weeks. There was a couple here in California, Robert Fuller. He was 23. He was found lynched right next to a city hall, like very close to an American flag in Lancaster.
No, in Palmdale. Robert
Fuller. Palmdale.
Was it? Yeah.
Sorry, it was, yeah, Palmdale. Sorry, they're very close together. And then Malcolm Harsh, he was 38. He was found lynched a couple days later. Dominique Alexander was lynched in New York, 27. And There was two others. I couldn't find the identities of their names or anything, but one of them was a 17-year-old teenager, and he was hanged in front of a school in Texas.
Yeah.
And then there was a woman who was pregnant with her child. She was 8 months pregnant. She was hanged. It was in South Africa. I want to preface this by saying there are so many names I want to say out loud, and I'm so sorry if I mispronounce them, but her name was Tshifakatso Pule. I really hope I'm saying that at least a little bit right. And if I'm not, please just do your research and like read about these people that are getting murdered.
Yeah.
And something that I didn't hear about until a couple of days ago was a queer trans black woman, TT Gully. She was found hanging in a tree in Portland on May 27th. And police didn't investigate because of the lack of public interest. And like her case and all the other cases I just mentioned, they were deemed as suicides immediately, which is insane.
Can I just say real quick, Malcolm Harsh, he was found in Victorville, and Dominique Alexander was found in the Bronx Borough of New York City.
That is, I mean, it goes to show that it's just like a rampant international and national systematic killings of black people. And it's really disgusting that they're all disregarded as suicides, because I assure you, and everyone will assure you, that is like, that has like 2 cents in their brain, black people don't kill themselves by lynching themselves. Like, that's a clear hate crime. And the fact that police immediately rush to say they're suicides, it just goes to show that their institution is deeply white. Like, it's just like, it's boiling over with white supremacy. And I do want to correct myself. I don't like the word white supremacy. There's nothing supreme about being a white supremacist. It's just white terrorism. And so I think language is important, and I don't like that they have this fucking superiority complex, to be honest. But yeah, and then in the same neighborhood that Dominique Alexander was found, Bronx residents said that they discovered multiple nooses hanging from trees in a park, the Van Cortlandt Park. By the time you hear this, it was like 2 Thursdays ago. And the New York police declined to open an investigation, claiming the knots were from leftover pinata string. And this happened on Juneteenth, which is just, it feels like a very clear message. And there have been multiple sightings of other nooses. The only black NASCAR driver found a noose in his garage.
Yeah, which is very suspicious because there's very restricted access right now because of COVID-19. So it's somewhat implied that it was potentially someone who worked at NASCAR who did that.
Yeah. And that's really disturbing, especially because a few weeks ago, NASCAR said that they would remove all Confederate flags from like their events and everything.
Yeah.
And someone must have not liked that announcement. And I sent this to Anna. I saw this Instagram post of a car in California, in Orange County, driving down the freeway. Someone took a photo of it. There was a noose. There was an American flag in the truck bed and a noose hanging from like where the license plate would be. It's just really disturbing. It's really, really disturbing.
Yeah, they've brought lynchings back in order to try and intimidate the Black Lives Matter movement. They're trying to prove a point that what we're doing to prove that, I don't know, Black Lives Matter, as simple as like just respect someone based on their skin color and don't try and deny the fact that like they matter, like their existence matters, and that they should be treated with equal amount of respect as any other person in this world. It's not okay. And they're trying to intimidate us out of pushing a much needed narrative in 2020. That's what's so wild. Yeah. It's 2020 and lynchings are back.
Yeah. I feel like we've heard news anchors in particular, like call Eric Garner or even George Floyd, like their deaths, they call them like modern day lynchings. This is a like literal lynching happening in the modern day. And the country's history of racism is not far away. When you look at things like, I'm hoping you guys are educating yourselves. And like a couple weeks ago, there was Loving Day, which commemorated the first interracial couple that was able to get married. And that was only like a couple decades ago. Like the fact that this is all in our recent history is really telling, because this country has not really progressed as much as we would like to believe. But I wanted to bring that up. And I also wanted to bring up the black women that have been murdered. Black women are so vital for everything. They've suffered a lot and they continue to suffer, along with Breonna Taylor, who has not found justice yet. There are other women that have been murdered that are not getting the attention that I think they deserve.
Because, yeah, Black women are probably some of the least respected people on the planet.
Yeah.
Just on skin color alone.
Mm-hmm.
Just people do not respect these human beings who are no different from you and I. Because their skin is darker than anyone else's. It's disgusting.
And Black women, they deserve safety in their homes and in their communities and in the world. Two Black trans women were found really brutally murdered. It's really disturbing. Dominique Remy Fells and Rhea Milton were victims of, in my opinion, obvious anti-trans violence, like just a hate crime. And then, again, I apologize if I mispronounce her name, but Oluwatoyin Salau. She was found murdered and sexually assaulted. She was only 19, I believe, which is really
in Tallahassee.
Devastating. And she was an activist, and she had a really hard life. And just thinking about the last moments of her life being so painful and full of suffering really breaks my heart. So I encourage you to read about her story if you have the stomach for it. I hope you do, because it's really important. But she didn't deserve what happened to her. No one deserves what happened to her. But yeah, I wanted to say their names out loud because their stories matter. And what also kind of bothers me, to bring up Breonna Taylor's case, is that there are so many obvious cover-ups that are happening in that case, and so many obvious just blatant fuck-ups of the police department and them not willing to do anything about it. So there's a thread on Twitter talking about what happened during the case. And Breonna Taylor's mother, she asked the officer to see the warrant, and they said they couldn't locate it. Literally, they couldn't locate the, like, what kind, like, either you're dumbasses or you're just covering up a fucking murder. The police officer, quote, said it may have gotten lost in the shuffle of things. They don't even know who signed the warrant. And then they told her mother to go to the hospital to see her daughter, even though they knew that Breonna Taylor was still in her apartment. Jeez. And when the mother came back to the apartment, she had to wait a full 2 hours to speak with a detective to get any idea what was going on. And then the detective asked if her mother knew of anybody that was trying to hurt her daughter. Like, the police literally just killed Breonna. And the fucking detective asked her mom if there was anything suspicious going on. Like, no. And then if you have, I mean, I'm sure it's going around, but the incident report from that night, just one lie after another. It's nearly blank. They list her injuries as none. They deny a forced entry, even though they entered the apartment with a battering ram. And it's just really disgusting evidence of cover-up.
Yeah, I think it's just all lies. And it's like, no one believes any of this. And the mayor of Louisville, Greg Fisher, has been accused of withholding evidence from Breonna Taylor's family. Their lawyer came out and said this, that he's clearly trying to help cover up what happened to protect the Louisville Police Department.
Yeah, and the chief of police, Robert Schroeder, I feel like he decided to throw us a bone by terminating Brett Hankinson, who was one of the officers. Oh, also, fun fact, Brett Hankinson's also been under investigation for multiple accusations of sexual assault in the recent weeks. But I think what we have to remember is that this termination has the possibility of being repealed. He's allowed to respond and dispute the allegations. And once a decision has been made, he can also repeal that. So I think everyone's calling for the arrest of these officers, but I get a little disheartened because we're asking the same institution that's broken and corrupt to do anything about the corrupt people within it. So I've been reading about like transformative justice and like other ways for us to get justice for these victims, because the police aren't going to do shit. And the Louisville Metropolitan Police Department, they say that they can't fire them anyways. Before they fired Hankinson, they said that because of the police union in the city and an agreement between the police union and the city, they can't be disciplined. And their words was that there was no indisputable evidence of wrongdoing in Taylor's killing, which is really annoying, because they're saying that because there's no video, because there's no 100% video, there's no evidence. But the officers were wearing plain clothes. They weren't wearing body cameras. Like, they're blaming us for not taking a video of something that happened in the middle of the night in someone's home when they were asleep. That's what it sounds like to me. But these rules are saying that an officer can be fired or suspended without pay before the investigation. But I'm just so frustrated by this all. Like, I'm so annoyed that we've come to this point, and we've already seen with George Floyd, like, even with police, or even with documented evidence, the police still fucking sit around and do nothing about it. They don't punish their own because they're all part of the same cult. It's just like a disgusting, murderous cult. God, I'm mad.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these unions have come up with these like loopholes where if the officer is fired or suspended, they could sue the city and get their job back anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the rules,
they don't apply to them.
Yeah, and then it's when an officer can be fired or suspended without pay before the completion of an investigation. This was set in a 2015 agreement with the city and the Fraternal Order of the Police, which, again, like I said, sounds like a cult. And the case is currently in the Attorney General's hands, and there's no clear timeline of when the investigation will be complete. I can't even understand.
It's also like,
I don't know.
Even if these officers get arrested or even fired, they usually get released. Like, one of the cops that didn't stop the George Floyd murder, like, I saw a video of him grocery shopping today on Instagram that's going around. Like, they are released on bail. They can probably are still eligible for their pensions. Like, they don't really get punished. Like, us demanding justice, it has to come from a different way. Like, we are asking the same institution that is fucked up to do anything about their fucked upness. And it's just not, I can't even verbalize and articulate myself in a good way, but I hope that makes sense. And I hope next time I can be a little bit more well-versed in this idea of, like, transformative justice, because it was really eye-opening to me, because calling for their arrest obviously isn't doing anything. And even though Breonna's law has been passed, so now no-knock warrants have been banned, her killers are still free. Like, yeah, they fired one of them, but he's still out there living his life.
Yeah.
The other officers, they're still out there living their lives.
And the attorney general who's apparently investigating this case is Daniel Cameron, who is a Republican. So who knows, because what he's thinking in this case. But I would recommend calling his office and tweeting at him and sending letters and emails, because he's sitting on this case and not completing this investigation in a timely manner. And he could do something about this if he wanted. He's the attorney general. But
yeah. He's also a black man, which is disappointing.
I just think it's everyone's in everyone's pocket, and
mm-hmm. they're just all corrupt.
It's very hard to get something done when so many people of power are trying to roadblock you, which is just, you know, it's part of the system, and that's why we have to keep fighting. Like, it's going to be a years and years long process to break down every aspect of what is going, what we're seeing in front of us, of how corrupt everything is, and how it's all like, police unions run this, we're in the pocket of that, we're in the ear of this. Like, it's so it's so many layers of just like corrupt bullshit, and it's so much of like, well, he's a friend of mine, and it's like, that means nothing. A friend of mine shouldn't hold up in a court of law. And the idea now that they are out here being like, hey guys, there's a police union, there's rules we need to follow, and it's like, where were those rules when you decided to kill Breonna Taylor and cover it all up? So no, there isn't actually rules. Sorry to break it to you, but no one is listening when you say we got to follow a procedure, because you didn't follow that procedure to begin with. So stop trying to act like now you give a shit about the procedure. Get those fools in jail so they can suffer. I mean, it's not going to be enough. It'll never be enough because they killed an innocent black woman in her home in the middle of the night. There will be never anything they can do, because you cannot bring that life back. So the least you could do is acknowledge that these people need to, like, put these people in fucking jail. That's the least you could do.
Yeah.
And they won't even do that.
They were monsters.
They don't. They won't even acknowledge that they fucked up. They're making excuse after excuse after excuse. Well, the thing you need to understand is it was actually a clerical error. And it's like, no one gives a fuck about your clerical errors. You killed a woman. You killed an innocent woman. There needs to be repercussions for your shit ass behavior. You don't have someone filling that out? Go back and tell me why every single person who was supposed to fill out that report is not fired to this day. Because I'm sorry, if you can't show up to your job and your job is to fill out a report, you're not doing your job. So you can't be working there anymore if you clearly don't even know how to do a simple job of typing in shot 8 times, wounds, 8 gunshot wounds. Tell me exactly where those gunshot wounds were on her body. You can't do that, then you can't do your job. Then you don't need to be working there. It feels so simple for people like us who like have some level of like empathy and understand ethics, but these people don't have any of that. And I'm sorry. Can I just say, if you are walking around and you are actively have a prejudice inside you where you are afraid a Black person, a Mexican person, an Indigenous person, all of the above, if that's what their genetics are, is you are just afraid of them, you shouldn't be a police officer.
No.
If you shouldn't be a police officer, if you just have this inherent prejudice, and yes, we all have prejudice, but if you are constantly fearing that any movement a person of color, a Black person makes, is going to risk your life, so you need to react by shooting them or killing them in some way, you're not cut out for this job. You shouldn't be doing a job where your first instinct is kill them before they can kill me. That's not what a public servant is. You are a servant to the public. You're not a judge, jury, and executioner to the public. You'd be surprised. We don't call you that.
But there's a really good article that went around a couple weeks ago that I encourage you to read. It's called Confessions of a Former Bastard Cop. And a former cop goes into detail about this fraternity, this like this disgusting brotherhood that is cultivated in the police forces that encourage them to stay quiet about wrongdoings or else they would get penalized. Cops that speak out against brutality are often fired. So I encourage you to read that if you want an inside look about this corrupt system. And it's Anna's right when she says that it's very layered. Like, just like the prison institutions, the police department is rooted in a history of corruption. And so it's been being built for centuries now, this corrupt system. It's going to take a long time to dismantle it. So we just have to keep going. And I encourage you, again, like, if you're doing your research and you're learning, watch things like 13th to understand exactly how Black people especially have been criminalized over and over again to make police think that they are worthy of giving them any type of justification for that brutality, because it's very layered. Politicians have made out Black people to be the source of the war on drugs and all of these things. So I encourage you to watch 13th. I encourage you to read articles by people that are going around. And I want to talk about another victim of police brutality that happened recently after we come back from a quick commercial break. So we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And we're back with there are so many things I want to talk about. I want to bring up Yemen and Palestine, and I hope I could get to Syria. But before I do that, I want to bring up a really unfortunate incident that happened that really makes me mad. He was 18 years old, Andres Guardado, G-U-A-R-D-A-D-O, Andres. He was 18 years old. He was studying to be a nurse at the Los Angeles Trade Technical College, and he was shot in the back while working as a security guard. His boss was a witness, and he said that Andres ran from the officer because he was scared. And after the incident, the sheriff's department pulled all of the security footage.
With no warrant. No warrant.
No warrant.
And they also didn't have their body cams on.
Yeah. And innocent people don't do that. Innocent people don't turn off body cameras. Innocent people, they don't smash cameras. They don't break it. They broke into the establishment and they stole a DVR in order to prevent the footage from being seen.
Like, yeah.
What?
They basically rolled up, pulled out their guns, and he got scared and ran and then came through with the weakest argument ever, which, you know, at this point, let's be real. Alex Villanueva, you fucking LA County piece of shit. He's our sheriff. Came through and was like, he had a gun on him that wasn't registered. It's like, in what world were you aware that this kid that you never even spoke to had a gun on him? So that's a lie, because that's what they do. They lie to try and cover up their clear fucked up behavior. And now it's coming through being like, and this is why we need funding. I'm sorry, you need funding to kill people on the streets, innocent 18-year-olds on the streets who have done nothing wrong? You need funding to kill them? And on top of that, you're going to come through and be like, see, the LA County Sheriff is on their own. It's like, oh, you're on your, the LA County Sheriff is on your own? But what about the LAPD? What about the PD, Beverly Hills PD? What about Burbank PD? What about all these PDs that work in LA County? Alex, let's just say, if you live in LA County, let's vote this clown out ASAP, because he's a fucking fool like I've never seen before in my life. Everything he says, when he came out and was like, well, you know, like, we'll stop beating the shit out of you when you stop protesting, or whatever the fuck he said a few weeks ago about all the protests. Like, it, the guy has no sense. He's not built in this world. He's built in weird frat boy college fuck world. And guess what? You don't deserve to work at your job. Honestly, we should defund you, your whole position. We should just fucking get rid of a county sheriff, because clearly you don't even like have the like basic skills of empathy or morals to do your job. Like, how are you gonna come through? Like, his family was peacefully protesting him at the precinct where they all work, that building that they go inside, and they fucking attack them all. They fucking pepper spray them, flashbang them. They were peacefully protesting their son's like unlawful murder.
Yeah.
And you're gonna come out here and pepper spray them? Okay, so
like,
y'all
we're
don't
protesting
know
police brutality, and we're met with more police brutality.
That's what they don't.
We're protesting racism, and we're met with more racism. It's really ironic and disgusting.
But that's the thing. I think they think we can continue. They can continue to intimidate us. But at this point, it's like, oh, you gone too far, you motherfuckers. We ain't gonna stop.
Well, yeah, that's why this momentum is really important, and that's why Black lives still matter. I think if your timeline is going back to normal, and if your timeline on social media is going back to normal, you don't follow enough Black people, because this movement is nowhere near being over. And I do want to highlight that there's no reason. Also, the whole gun, him having a gun thing, like, we've seen police on camera planting weapons, so I don't believe that for a fucking second. Even if it is true, I don't. There's no reason that a kid is running away from you and you shoot them in the back. Deadly force was not necessary. It's never necessary as far as I'm concerned at this point. So I think we need an immediate independent investigation, not led by police, in order to ensure full transparency and accountability, because he was a child. This is the third killing of a young Latino person in the state of California. 22-year-old Sean Monterosa was killed on June 2nd in Vallejo. 23-year-old Eric Saldago, he was killed while his pregnant girlfriend was shot and injured by police on June 9th in Oakland. And now we have Andres Guardado. Guardado. I can't say names. I just know that I care, and I apologize for mispronouncing things. But what's really important about the Black Lives Matter movement is that we're protesting police brutality, and we're protesting how Black people have been targeted repeatedly with violence and everything. But Latinos, like Black and Brown people, they're always targeted by police. And I just wanted to bring up his story because it's really awful. And it's disgusting the way that the police respond to their own murders. And yeah. I want to bring up something that's really, that's just like a another fun fact, is that when Dylann Roof, when he killed 9 people in a mass shooting, he's a young white boy.
Terrorist. He's a white terrorist.
White terrorist. He's a mass shooter. He killed 9 people. Cops put him in a bulletproof vest and they took him to Burger King. And this is for someone that killed multiple people. These people that are being shot down now by police, Andres and everyone else like him, they didn't do anything to deserve dying. No one deserves that. But when it comes to someone that looks like them, someone like Dylann Roof, maybe they can see their son in them or whatever. He has a future. Fuck that shit. Like, that is disgusting. That is fucking white privilege and white supremacy to a T. It is so disgusting. Yeah, I'd be remiss not to bring that up. They're terrorists. They're not cops. They are terrorists. They are terrorizing Americans. They're killing Americans. They're corrupting the justice system. They are terrorists. There's just no clear definition for what they're doing across the nation. It is organized, funded terrorism. That's what police
but
are.
Shereen,
they're organized, funded terrorists.
They're from a good family.
That's it's just, my most hated line. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. It is an old, as old as history and as old as patriarchy itself. You will be corrupted with power. And that's what this is. Cops are too powerful and they are terrorists. They are just organized, funded terrorism.
Yeah. Back to the Andres Guardado note. It can honestly... It always feels so random, but that's the problem. Like, if you're a person of color or a Black man, like, it can happen to anyone. And mm-hmm. one of those people is Elijah McClain, who was murdered by the police in Aurora, Colorado. He was walking home. He wears masks because he has anemia. And, in, you know, if you guys know what Colorado's like, it's very cold. It's a mountain state. Very cold. So he wears masks when he's out walking around at night. I believe he was going to get some dinner and he was walking home. Someone called 911 on him because he was wearing a mask and the police came, grabbed him, beat him. There is actual body cam footage of this, which was released. And in the footage, you see he's honestly it's devastating. He's basically saying, I'm an introvert. I didn't do anything. I'm sorry. I was just walking home. Like, just basically being like, I don't know what I've done. Please stop. I'm really scared. Like, don't do this. I'm quiet. Like, yeah, I am sorry. I'm so weird. Like, basically just being like, I'm sorry. I don't fit in. Like, trying to explain himself in a way that he should never fucking have to. And of course, they injected him with ketamine to try and calm him down because he was out here being like, I'm not who you're looking for. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. And then he went into cardiac arrest and died in the ambulance to the hospital. And no one fucking knows what happened in that goddamn ambulance. And he was just a young...
The dose of ketamine they did give him was way too high of a dose. Like, yeah. It was a lethal dose.
Like, yeah, and he was 23 years old. And, you know, he was
shit about it.
And the most devastating thing I read about him was that he liked to play violins for stray cats to calm them. Everything about that line, like, broke me. It was like, this is just any other person who just is a good soul, who never deserved this, should have never been even had a cop's hands laid on him at all, like, in his life, because he's just a 23-year-old young man who enjoyed playing the violin, who wanted to help stray cats have less anxiety when they're picked up and brought into shelters.
Yeah, I think that's what some racists or racist-adjacent people that don't admit they're racist will say about, like, George Floyd or about men that get murdered is, like, well, they have a criminal history. They did this, they did that. But what about now? What about with people that are innocent, that aren't doing anything, that are, like, have, like, you can't deny the racism there. There's no excuse.
Yeah, but even like, don't ever, because like, just because someone has a past criminal record is no excuse to fucking murder them.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying there's like the argument that idiots will make.
I know,
when
it's
it
just
comes
so
to that.
Devastating because it's like, I'm sorry, that's beside the point.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
not doing anything wrong.
Yeah,
everyone has a past. Like, you can't be fucking with people like this. It's so fucked up. It's like either you have a past or you don't. Whatever. That's not that cop's problem. While he's got his knee on your neck.
Yeah,
that's not his business.
No. I only bring it up because Elijah, he was a very kind person. Like, he wasn't aggravating them. I think also what this brings up is that stop calling police, or just tell everyone you know to stop calling police on Black people, on Latino people. Stop. Just stop calling the cops on people that aren't doing anything, the people that are sleeping in their car.
In the situation of Rashard Brooks, he fell asleep in a line through a drive-thru that people were just going around him. But here's what you do. You go, you knock on his window, you wake him up, you say, hey, if you've been drinking too much, park your car. You know, we'd rather you didn't drive. There was no reason to call the police in that incident. There's no reason to call the police at all. What you do? I would knock on the window. Hey, man, you fell asleep. You know, it's a drive-thru.
Yeah.
Move it the fuck along. You don't need, every time you call the police on a Black person, you are saying, I don't care if that person lives or dies, because you are basically sentencing them to death. Because if you are not reading the room of this country, police kill Black people. That's what they do. You never call the police, because we know what they are like. They don't give a shit. They live in their weird ego-driven situation of, I have a badge so I can do whatever the fuck I want. And it's like, that's how we've built them up to be. So now you need to understand, we got to cut their fucking legs. That's what defunding the police, basically. We got to cut them the fuck down, because they don't need this. They don't need that kind of money to have, like, militarized tactical gear.
No, not at all. Not especially when we're going through a pandemic and doctors are wearing, like, garbage bags instead of hazmat suits, because we don't have the funding. We have the funding. We're just allocating it to our military and our police force, which is over-militarized and just funded terrorism at this point. Let's take one more break, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And we're back. I know you wanted to go into like a deep dive on the FBI and investigating white supremacy and the police force. And I just wanted to bring a quick thing. I slept on this show for a while and I'm just watching it now, but I'm watching Watchmen. And I highly encourage y'all to watch this show, because I'm excited to learn what Anna has learned about through this article that she's about to reference. But there's evidence dating back to the 20s, and what's good about the show is that it references the Tulsa Massacre, it references Juneteenth, and also references the fact that the KKK were in the NYPD in the 20s, which is true. So there's a clear history of white supremacy in the police force. You just have to fucking investigate it. So I encourage y'all to watch Watchmen is what I'm saying. And that's my one thing before I will hand it over to you.
Thank you. Yeah, so this article by The Intercept has been on my mind a lot since I read it. I've read it a few times now because it just grinds my fucking gears. But it's basically how the FBI has quietly investigated white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement for a long time now. They're fully fucking aware, which kind of takes me back. I was going to make this point earlier, but the hangings of all these black people in America in the last like 2 to 3 weeks is, in my opinion, connected to law enforcement. There's a reason they're calling it suicides and refusing to really investigate further or doing these weird investigations where they release no information. It's because, like Ahmaud Arbery, who we spoke about a few episodes back, who was murdered by these two white guys, every one of these people who finds themselves in the KKK, or any, you know, I'm not saying they're in the KKK, but any sort of white supremacy group where they are basically racist, they're connected to law enforcement. So I believe that maybe these people who are either hanging nooses or literally lynching black people in this country are connected to law enforcement in some way, which is why they're able to just kind of brush past it. Yeah, I said it. That's my conspiracy theory. And I don't even think it's that much of a conspiracy. I think it's connected.
It's factual.
So basically, I've highlighted a bunch of parts from this article. I'm going to just read them to you because I think they're very important. So bureau policies have been crafted to take into account the active presence of domestic extremists in police departments. Okay, so white supremacists and other domestic extremists maintain an active presence in the U.S. police departments and other law enforcement agencies. The conclusion, notable for its confidence, appears in a classified FBI counterterrorism policy guide from April 2015, which was obtained by The Intercept. The guide, which details the process by which the FBI enters individuals on a terrorism watch list, the known or suspected terrorist file, that's the watch list, notes that domestic terrorism investigations focused on militia extremists, white supremacist extremists, and sovereign citizen extremists have often identified active links to law enforcement officers. And it explains in a lot of detail how bureau policies have been crafted to take this infiltration into account. I will link the article so you guys can read it in full. But although these right-wing extremists have posed a growing threat for years, federal investigators have been reluctant to publicly address this threat or to point out the movement's long-standing strategy of infiltrating law enforcement communities. So no centralized recruitment process or set of national standards exists for the 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States, many of which have deep historical connections to racist ideologies. As a result, state and local police, as well as sheriff's departments, present ample opportunities for white supremacists and other right-wing extremists looking to expand their power base. There's this really heavily redacted version of the October 2006 FBI Internal Intelligence Assessment that was released. And the agency, the FBI, raised the alarm over white supremacist groups' historical interest in infiltrating law enforcement communities or recruiting law enforcement personnel. The effort, the memo noted, can lead to investigative breaches and can jeopardize the safety of law enforcement sources or personnel. The memo also states that law enforcement had become aware of the term, in quotes, ghost skins, which used among white supremacists is to describe those who avoid overt displays of their beliefs to blend into society and covertly advance white supremacist causes, which is basically someone who is a white supremacist, but isn't actively, they're not like, you wouldn't know right off the bat that, oh, Tom is a white supremacist, but he doesn't ever do anything suspicious or white supremacy-like or whatever. So in at least one case, the FBI learned of a skinhead group encouraging ghost skins to seek employment with law enforcement agencies in order to warn their crews of any investigations. So they prey on people who are like as normal as they come, who no one would turn an eye and be like, oh, Steve, but he's clearly in the KKK, you know? Mm-hmm. So the report appeared after a series of scandals involving local police and sheriff departments. In LA, for example, the U.S. District Court judge found in 1991 that members of a local sheriff's department had formed a neo-Nazi gang and habitually terrorized Black and Latino residents. In Chicago, John Burge, a police detective and rumored KKK member, was fired and eventually prosecuted in 2008 over charges relating to the torture of at least 120 black men during his decades-long career. Burge is notoriously referred to an electric shock device he used during interrogations as the, in quotes, N-word box. So in Cleveland, officials found that a number of police officers had scrawled racist or Nazi graffiti throughout their department's locker rooms. And in Texas, two officers were fired when it was discovered they were Klansmen. One of them said he tried to boost the organization's membership by giving an application to a fellow officer who he thought shared his white, Christian, and heterosexual values. Which is the lamest vibe I've ever heard of. Although the FBI has not publicly addressed the issue of white supremacist infiltration of law enforcement since that 2006 report, in a 2015 speech, FBI Director James Comey made an unprecedented acknowledgement of the role historically played by law enforcement in communities of colors. He said, "All of us in law enforcement must be honest enough to acknowledge that much of our history is not pretty." And then him and the agency have been less forthcoming about that history's continuation into the present. They're kind of like, okay, into the present, excuse me. They basically were like, okay, well, bye, and didn't do anything about it, which is fucking whack. So in 2009, shortly after the election of Barack Obama, Department of Homeland Security intelligence study was released after it was written in coordination with the FBI, and it warned of the resurgence of right-wing extremism. They wrote, "Right-wing extremists have capitalized on the election of the first African-American president and are focusing their efforts to recruit new members, mobilize existing supporters, and broaden their scope and appeal through propaganda." And they singled out disgruntled military veterans as likely targets of recruitment. And they go on to say, "Right-wing extremists will attempt to recruit and radicalize returning veterans in order to exploit their skills and knowledge derived from military training and combat." So they have a plan. And it's to basically get old white guys. It's just so fucked up. It's just like people who have suffered enough through war. They're just like preying on them. But the report concluded that lone wolves and small terrorist cells embracing violent right-wing extremist ideology are the most dangerous domestic terrorism threat in the U.S., okay? That's who is the most dangerous, not Middle Eastern jihadis who are like, they're pushing this fucking Islamophobic ideology. No, it's white men. White men are the most dangerous, okay? Remember that. Released just ahead of the nationwide Tea Party protests, this report, it caused an uproar among conservatives who were particularly angered by the suggestion that veterans might be implicated. No, not our great veterans. They couldn't possibly be white supremacists, even though they lived through a different fucking time where it was totally okay to lynch a black man for fucking fun. Excuse me, that was my impression of a conservative. But they were particularly angered by that, and then they didn't like this whole like broad brush, which the report seemed to paint a range of right-wing groups. They just can't, conservatives can't handle the truth. It's literally like, you can't handle the truth because that's the truth. So fuck off if you can't handle it, conservatives. Anyway, basically they faced a lot of criticism, and Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano disavowed the document and apologized to veterans, and the agency's unit investigating right-wing extremism was largely dismantled, and the report's lead investigator was pushed out. According to Heidi Byrick, who leads the Southern Poverty Law Center's tracking of extremist groups, she said, "They stopped doing intel on that, and that was that. The FBI, in theory, investigates right-wing terrorism and right-wing extremism, but have very limited resources. The loss of that unit was a loss for a lot of people who did this kind of work." According to Daryl Johnson, who is a lead researcher of the Department of Homeland Security report, "Federal law enforcement agencies in general, the FBI, the Marshals, the ATF, are aware that extremists have infiltrated state and local law enforcement agencies, and that there are people in law enforcement agencies that may be sympathetic to these groups. Daryl Johnson, he now runs the DT Analytics, which is a consulting firm that analyzes domestic terrorism, and says the problem has gotten a lot more troublesome since he released that report. Johnson also added that Homeland Security has given up tracking right-wing domestic extremists. It's only the FBI, he said, adding, or FBI now. FBI is the only person who's fucking doing any work, apparently. He said, adding that the local police departments don't seem to be doing anything to address the problem. Goes on to say, there's not even any training now to make the state and local police aware of these groups and how they can infiltrate their ranks. Of course, a spokesperson for Department of Homeland Security declined to comment on the 2009 report or the agency's specific concerns with white supremacists and right-wing groups, because of course they have nothing to say because they're trash and useless. 2014, the Department of Justice reestablished its Domestic Terrorism Task Force, a unit that was created following the Oklahoma City bombing. But for the most part, the government's efforts to confront domestic terrorism threats over the last decade have focused on homegrown extremists radicalized by foreign groups. Last year, a group of progressive members of Congress called on... This was written in 2017. So this is like... When I say last year, I mean it was the last year of Obama's presidency. But anyway, in 2016, a group of progressive members of Congress called on President Obama and Department of Homeland Security to update the controversial 2009 report. The United States, this is what they wrote, the United States allocates significant resources towards combating Islamic violent extremism while failing to devote adequate resources to right-wing extremism. The lack of political will comes at a heavy price. That's what they wrote. So critics fear that the backlash following the 2009 Department of Homeland Security report hindered further action against the growing white supremacist threat, and that it was largely ignored because the issue was so politically controversial. I believe, and this is Samuel Jones, a professor of law at the John Marshall Law School in Chicago, who's known for writing about white power ideology and law enforcement. Here, I believe that because that report was so denounced by conservatives, it sort of closed the door on whatever the FBI may have been considering doing with respect to combating infiltration of law enforcement by white supremacists. Because after the 2006 FBI report, we simply cannot find anything by local law enforcement or the federal government addressing this issue. Huh. Well, shit. Shireen, would you do any thoughts? Check in with you. I've just been going.
I think what's important to realize here is that this article didn't even get a lot of coverage. Like, the investigation of white supremacy and law enforcement didn't even get coverage back then. Yeah. I think the fact that we found this now, that you found this now, is just telling of the fact that no one pays attention to the white supremacy, the white terrorism, I should say. It's not supreme in any way in law enforcement.
It's almost like mind-numbing how dumb it all is. Like, some old white guy was offended that you were like, they prey on veterans. Right. No one said it's all veterans. They said they take advantage of veterans. And you were like, well, we cannot insult our veterans. Yeah. And it's like, then why don't you put any money into social services for them if you care so much about them?
Exactly.
Okay. There's a few more things that I want to get into. To terrorize our ability to understand the world. So Pete Seamy, who's a sociologist at Chapman University who spent decades studying the proliferation of white supremacists in the U.S. military, agreed that the report underscores the problem of even discussing this issue. It underscores how difficult this issue is to get any traction on because a lot of people don't want to discuss this, let alone actually do something about it. Seamy said that the extremist strategy to infiltrate the military and law enforcement has existed for decades. In a study he conducted of individuals indicted for far-right terrorism-related activities, he found that at least 31% had military experience. Okay. So after a series of investigations uncovering substantial numbers of extremists in the military, the Department of Defense moved to impose stricter screenings, including monitoring recruits' tattoos for white supremacist symbols and discharging those found to espouse racial or racist views. Okay. According to the Southern Poverty Law, Heidi Byrick, I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong, Byrick. The military has completely reformed its process on this front. I don't know why it wouldn't be the same for police officers We can't have people with guns having crazy ideas or ideas that threaten certain populations. And she was also one of the people who lobbied the Department of Defense to adopt those reforms. Okay, so now we know. Military took the steps. They were like, okay, you can't be rolling through here with a swastika tattoo. Mm-hmm. Like, come the fuck on. You can't be trusted. So apparently it's a lot harder to reform a police department. Okay. It's a lot harder to reform a police department. You get me there? AKA, you can't reform a police department. You just have to fucking defund it. Okay, I'll continue. Just want to make that point clear. So it's a lot harder because they all operate differently. And of course, the historical affinity of certain police departments with the same racial ideologies espoused by extremists. Yeah, because we've spoken about this, I think, on the last episode or two, where police were created because enslaved Black people were allowed to no longer work as slaves.
Yeah. The first police force was a slave patrol.
Yeah.
Like, police were just slave patrollers.
Yeah, and also they have, like, a broader reluctance to do much about it, because they're just like, what? So if you look at the history of law enforcement in the United States, it's a history of white supremacy, to put it bluntly. And this is Pete Seamy, who I was referencing earlier. He cited the origin of U.S. policing in the slave patrols of the 18th and 19th centuries. Mm-hmm. More recently, just going back 50 years, law enforcement, particularly in the South, was filled with Klan members.
Yep.
Norm Stamper, he's a former chief of Seattle Police Department and vocal advocate for police reform, told The Intercept that white supremacy was not simply a matter of history. There are police agencies throughout the South and beyond that come from that tradition. To think that that kind of thinking has dissolved somehow is myopic at best, aka people are still thinking these ways. Stamper said he had fired officers who expressed racist views, but added, it's not likely to happen in most police departments because many of those departments come from a tradition of saying the officer is entitled to his or her opinions. Ugh. Whether the First Amendment protects an officer's right to express racist, white supremacist views, or even to associate with organizations that endorse those views, is something that remains a subject of debate. Stamper said, you can fire someone. Whether the termination will stand up under review is the real question. And that's what we've been seeing with Louisville, with them, these police unions being like, well, we can sue and I'll get my job back because your reason for firing me isn't okay. And yeah, it's like,
they're protected.
Should be okay to fire someone who's a clear racist, but excuse me.
But that's why George Floyd's murderer looked right in the camera and did nothing because he knew that his actions were protected by the people that were by the government. Like, he knew that him being a murderer in his eyes was part of the job description, which is really disgusting. But they do things because they know they're going to get away with it, and they usually do.
Yeah, they're
like, imagine the ones that weren't filmed, like Breonna Taylor's. Like, imagine the ones that aren't getting attention.
Yeah. So Pete Seamy says local state and federal agencies all to some extent have their hands tied because it's not necessarily against the law to be a member of a domestic hate group. It should be.
It definitely should be.
Yeah, and apparently just the military is one exception because of its unique legal status. For instance, the U.S. government considers the KKK a hate group, but membership in the group is not illegal. Okay. That's the case for all domestic hate and extremist groups, though authorities can choose to target their members under conspiracy statutes, according to Seamy.
But that's the thing. The KKK should also be a terrorist organization, but yeah. It's not. Being a hate group is way too soft of a thing to call it. It is a terrorist organization.
It is.
But that's not what it's called. And that's why it gets a slap on the wrist whenever it gets called out.
Yeah, and so most police departments don't screen prospective officers for hate group affiliations. The SPLC, Southern Poverty Law, has reported that the number of these groups peaked at more than 1,000 in 2011, from less than half of that in the late 1990s. Though experts like Seamy note that many of these groups come and go, and membership between them is often fluid. Although officers have been fired for expressing hateful views, sometimes to be rehired by other departments, as happens regularly with officers accused of misconduct. Some officers have also challenged those dismissals in court. Robert
Henderson, an 18-year-old veteran of the Nebraska State Patrol, was fired when his membership in the Klan was discovered. He sued on First Amendment grounds and appealed all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, who declined to hear his case. Last year, 14 officers in the San Francisco Police Department were caught exchanging racist and homophobic texts that included several references to white power and messages such as, "All N-words must fucking hang."
Wow.
Yeah. Most of those officers remain on the force after an attempt to fire them was blocked by a judge who said the statute of limitation had expired. Those people work there today. In San Francisco of all fucking
That's
places.
That's disgusting.
You think, oh, this city's so liberal. That's why you don't call the police on people, because you don't know who the fuck works there. So all agencies, if they want to, can curtail this problem. The problem is that many do not, according to Jones, the guy who wrote that report, the Department of Homeland Security report. He's been tracking similar incidents following the 2006 FBI report and believes that many more get buried behind the code of silence that often dominates police departments, like you were saying. When somebody holds a belief that indicates that they do not see all Americans are worthy of equal protection under the law, it compromises their ability to be a police officer. The FBI did not respond to a detailed series of questions sent by The Intercept about its knowledge of extremist presence in the law enforcement agencies, but a spokesperson for the agency did comment on the practice of placing silent hits, and a silent hit is a watch-listed police officer, on law enforcement officers. They said, while a silent hit would keep the subject who is a law enforcement employee from knowing that they are under scrutiny, it would be standard practice to let someone at the agency know that one of their officers was being was under investigation, which is always a problem because you don't know who you can trust, because that person could easily turn around and tell that person who's been marked as a silent hit, you're being investigated. And there's no control. There's no way to control these people because we've allowed them to believe that this police department is such a brotherhood of murder and blood and lack of ethics and having a moral compass. But Jones goes on to say, this is a fundamental problem in this country. We simply do not take this flexible and forgiving and exceptionally understanding approach for combating any other form of terrorism. Anybody who's on social media advocating support of ISIS can be criminally charged with very little effort. Easy peasy. Wow. So for some reason, we have stepped away from the domestic threat of terrorism and right-wing extremism, according to Jones. The only way we can reconcile this behavior is if we accept the possibility that the ideology that permeates white nationalists and white supremacists is something that many in our federal and law enforcement communities understand and may be in sympathy with. That sympathy might just be reflected by the election of a president who is endorsed and celebrated by the KKK, who has been reluctant to disassociate himself from individuals espousing white supremacist views. According to Pete Simi, this election for white supremacists was a signal that we're on the right track. I have never seen anything like it among white supremacists, where they express the feeling of triumph and jubilee, and they are elated about the idea that they finally have someone who gets it in the White House. And that's that.
Well,
that's where we're at. That's where we're at, where it goes from top to bottom, untouchable.
It's so disturbing to see it spelled out that way, because it's one thing to like have a hunch or a theory that white supremacists and like white terrorists are behind a bunch of, are like embedded in laws and law enforcement. And we've seen it in some videos of like cops literally flashing the white power symbol in the camera in the recent weeks of this happening. But yeah, it's disgusting how protected they still are. And I'll again bring up Watchmen. Like, there's a brilliant episode where it's so crazy this show came out last year, because it is so prophetic and so timely to our current situation. But it delves into how the KKK had a huge foothold in the NYPD in the 20s. Like, it's a real thing. Like, and if that happened in the 20s, like, it continues. Like, there's no, I don't know, it's just if you guys have seen Watchmen, you guys know what I'm talking about. But it's just, this is really disturbing moment of American racial history that's continuing now. But obviously it's a show, and it like takes its own narrative And like, it's also like a superhero show, so it's not exactly historically accurate, but I really commend it for bringing up things that aren't talked about in history books, like the Tulsa Massacre, like Juneteenth, like all these things. Like, the fact that it takes a show to educate someone is just telling of our current climate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up what's happening in Yemen and Palestine because it's pretty horrendous. But we're kind of running out of time. I will say this episode comes out right before Israel is planning to annex Palestine. Israel's about to annex the West Bank on July 1st. And what that means is they are going to seize a large part of the West Bank, more than they already have in the past. And about 300,000 Palestinians will be displaced. It is a really disgusting display of continued destruction of Palestine and swallowing it up into Israel and displacing Palestinians, forcing them out of their homes. And maybe I can talk about this in more depth, but I did want to bring it up because it is happening in the next few days. And I'm hoping by the time this comes out, something would have happened, but I have my doubts because Israel and America are just buddy-buddy and they protect each other. But yeah, should we just say we'll revisit the rest in the next episode?
Yeah.
Okay, this has been Ethically Ambiguous, and again, because there's so many things going on, I really encourage you guys to do your research. Look up what's happening in Yemen. It's the largest humanitarian crisis going on. They're literally being starved. Stay aware of the world news, the fact that Trump fucking agreed that Muslims in China should be put in concentration camps. Like, that's a real thing. Like, I'm not surprised because Trump is scum, but I do want to raise awareness about it. So look it up on your own. There are people suffering everywhere, and I think it's our job at the very least to tell you about it. So, and to educate yourself about it. It's your job to educate yourself. So follow us at Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG on Instagram. We're constantly posting stuff on our Twitter and on our Instagram stories, especially to try to keep you informed. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter, and follow us. We're constantly retweeting more information, and follow more Black people.
Yeah.
Shit is going on every goddamn informed day. Every time you see something has happened, retweet it because your followers need to know. We need to be as active and out loud as possible, because if we just let this shit slide under the rug, get brushed under the rug, I don't have a lot of dust under the rug references. It's not okay. People need to know this is going on, because the second you start letting it slide, then we go back into our complacency, and that's not okay. Also, buy our t-shirt to help support the Middle East and getting PPE out to them.
Yeah.
Link in bio and everything.
Yeah, link in bio, and just stay informed. And I don't know, I feel so overwhelmed with this idea that there's just so many things going on. Like, I didn't even touch on the sanctions in Syria, which is like deeply affecting me. But next time, I hope to get into all of it with y'all. So until then, Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.